And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast live from a very small room in our South Street Seaport studio, where I am thrilled to be joined by NBA champion, All-Star? All-Star.
Don't do that. No, I was never an All-Star.
Well, you should have been an All-Star.
I felt so, but it's okay.
Richard Jefferson, how you doing?
It's good. I'm glad you used the word thrilled. That's a word that's not often used in reference to me. People excited to be around me, so I'm glad you're the one.
I don't think that's true. I think you're being self-effacing. But so here's what happened to me last night. Are you ready?
Please tell me.
I tweeted at halftime of Warriors Clippers that we should just have the Warriors and the Bucks scrimmage for the next week because the Clippers were playing well and they were playing hard and there's just nothing they can do. And then I went to bed. Mm-hmm. And then I woke up at 5:45 in the morning because I had to pee because I'm an old man.
Yeah, that's fair.
Old
prostate.
Man.
This is the prostate.
Checked my phone. Yeah. And I said, oh boy, I guess I'm just awake now and I got to watch the second half of the game. And then they clowned me on Get Up, which is deservedly so. I want to open with this. Okay. Here's a possession from last night's game I'm always going to remember. 7 minutes to go. It's 121-06 still. Okay. Probability is like 99%.
Yeah.
Still. Lou Williams, Pat Beverly pick and roll, okay, to get the switch of Steph onto Lou Williams. Steph's defense has been better than it was last night. It was not great. They get the switch. Transition into Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell pick and roll. Maybe the best pick and roll in the entire league this season.
Agreed.
Just straight clowning dudes.
Yeah.
Okay, so Lou gives Steph a little fake to his right before the pick. Steph bites. Okay, now he's behind. Lou's going left around the pick, and he's open.
Mm-hmm.
He starts pulling up. For a three, Bogut says, oh, shit, I got to get my Frankenstein out there and challenge this three. Okay, Lou sees that. Harrell rolls to the rim. Boom, dish to Harrell. Harrell's open. What do we think is going to happen? Harrell is going to finish the play because that's what he normally does. Draymond Green rotates off Danilo Gallinari on the left baseline. Harrell, touch pass to Gallo. Not a lot of Harrell touch passes this season. Gallo and one. I'm highlighting that play because all of the focus today is going to be on the Warriors collapse, DeMarcus is injured, are the Warriors disinterested, blah, blah. The Clippers freaking played great. And I want to start by just saying that. They played great. Lou Williams and Harrell have been out of their mind all series. Gallo, sneakiest 24 points anyone's going to score this year. Just congratulations. They played great. That's all.
Yeah, they played outstanding. And when you break down that play, so for NBA fans out there, which if you're listening to this podcast, you are, when you look at that, that's something that the Warriors had done all the time. You get a Draymond, Steph, pick and roll. Then, you know, you collapse on Steph, you throw it to Draymond, and then Draymond playmakes. And he's throwing it out to KD. He's throwing it out to Clay. He's throwing a lob to Looney or DeMarcus. So that play that they ran was executed to perfection. And that's normally what the Warriors were known for. That's what they were doing when they were up by 31, when they were up by 14 with X amount of minutes to go. That's what they were doing. But the Clippers just did it better in the fourth quarter. They gave up 85 points in the second half.
That's like a typo.
In the second half.
That's not a thing that
multiple
happens.
40-point quarters? I can honestly say, even in playing against them in two finals and playing against them, you know, over this stretch of their greatness, I don't think I've ever seen them give up 85 points in a second half because typically you switch everything with their lineup, so it just slows down your offense because you have no triggers.
Just a little stat for you.
Give me a stat.
Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell pick and roll for the series is 1.2 points per possession.
I don't know what that means.
That means, so take the best offense in the league
and
make it like 20% better. That's what that is. They're just killing teams.
Yeah, that's a good offense.
The amazing thing about this was there were like 15 moments where I was like, oh, the game's about to be over. Oh, the game's about to be over. Here are just some things that happened. 116-100. Curry walks into an open three, misses on the pick and roll. Offensive rebound, he walks into a two, misses that. Could have been up 18. Very next possession, Iguodala gets a steal and is staring at a pick six. This is like eight minutes to go.
I saw it. Loses it.
Loses the ball. They had three separate instances. KD commits a charging foul on a 3-on-2 with 2 minutes and 30 seconds to go. Draymond threw the ball away at some point after Klay Thompson got a steal and a deflection. Just threw the ball. Iguodala wasn't ready for it. Oh. There was just Patrick Beverly picking Curry at half court. I think it was still a 16-point game then.
Oh, my God. That was a felony, right? Like, if you steal something like that from someone, like that's a felony. It was amazing. He just took it from him.
And I love that Doc, I don't know how they've done this. This team plays so hard, and they never quit. And they are the quintessential team that shouldn't be like this, because half their roster is free agents. And the other half are like, all we hear is rumors about all the stars that are coming in here this summer. Like teams, I don't know if you've ever been on a team like that, but teams like that, like you're really at risk of guys playing for their contracts, guys playing for themselves. And this team plays the opposite.
Well, let me say this. I was so, so fortunate. I had a sit down interview with Steve Ballmer. And everything that he talked about since taking over the team and the grit and the grind, he was like, we don't want to be the glitz and glamour of LA. That's for a demographic of LA. We feel like we can touch on a demographic in LA that is just hard-nosed, hard-working, blue-collar people. Those are the people they want to bring in. Those are the people that they want working for the organization. Those are the type of kids that they want to draft. That's who they want to be. And so it doesn't surprise me.
It's not fake.
It's not fake. That's real. Like Ballmer is intense. When you guys see him dancing and doing all this stuff and getting excited, I kid you not, in this interview and when we were talking, that's legitimate. And so, yes, one thing that you have to give him credit for is because, look, no one knew this was going to happen. We don't want to sit here and act like, oh, this is what the Clippers do. But ultimately, these are the type of people that they want in their organization. So it's not a surprise, because you can't do this with just any group of guys. You have to have a bunch of selfless players that know how to play hard and only play hard.
And you're talking, you can't do this big picture.
Big picture.
You can't do what happened last night against the defending champions on the road. Like, a normal good NBA team can't do that.
No.
It takes a different kind of group of guys to make that rally. And I just thought they were phenomenal. And Lou just rolls out of bed. It's ridiculous. The guy just knows how to score.
Well, and I said this in the beginning of the series. I said this would be a great appetizer for the Warriors. And I still stand by that. I love Warrior fans. I know I'm one of the bad guys, and I always get on TV.
Were you at the Halloween party?
Everyone was at the Halloween party.
What did you dress up as?
I went as Barack Obama.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was that? Was there like a corpse of Steph Curry with like 3-1 written on it or something?
No, there was cookies that were like little graveyards, but it's like they make it seem like LeBron James is making the cookies, right? They make it seem like we're going through it.
He did wear the Ultimate Warrior shirt off the plane.
But I will say this. This was made by Homage, and they are an Ohio-based company. And we had all been wearing those shirts on and off. Like, look, because we're all wrestling fans. That was kind of like our gig. And I'm not saying it might not have been a little subtle thing, but then Draymond wants to wear the Quickie t-shirt. And it was like, well, that's just kind of – it's a good one, but it's kind of unoriginal, right? But, yeah. There is some back and forth. There should be competitiveness. There should be a little bit of pettiness in it, because it's fun. Because as long as it's respectful competition, that's all that matters. And, you know, I was so fortunate, even though I was just a vet, I had a bad back, I didn't play much. I was on that first Warrior team that went to the playoffs with Mark Jackson. So I have nothing but respect for Clay and Steph and Draymond and everybody there in that organization. That being said, like, the Warriors have to understand that the role that they are playing, they are chasing history, not championship history, not back-to-back history. They're trying to put themselves in an elite category that only like two or three franchises have ever done in basketball history, and really in sports history. So it's bigger than Patrick Beverley. It's bigger than not playing defense in the fourth quarter and then in the second half. They have to kind of refocus, and hopefully – it's shitty what happened with Boogie Cousins, but hopefully they can put themselves in a position where maybe they feel like they can get a chip on their shoulder the right way now that their guy is down.
People, this show is sponsored, as it often is, by SeatGeek. The ticket industry hasn't changed that much in a long time. There's a bunch of big companies who have been around forever, but they don't really care about making the experience easier for you, the customer. SeatGeek is there to change all that. It has 50,000, actually more than 50,000, five-star reviews in the App Store, and it's focused on making your experience easy. It pulls in millions of tickets from all over the web. It's one-stop shopping. You don't have to click around to a million sites out of fear that you've missed a really good deal. It rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10. It has an interactive seat map. It has green dots for good deals, red dots for less good deals. It's very simple. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It is by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. Whenever I have a friend from out of town, I need to buy him a ticket to a game, I go there. They've helped me with Broadway shows, comedy shows, you name it. Everything, they have it. Best of all, my listeners get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do Download the SeatGeek app. Enter promo code LOW, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. Bam, $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Remember, that's promo code LOW, L-O-W-E, for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
So here's what I'll ask you.
Tell me.
As someone who knows more about the NBA than I'll forget today. Set aside Cousins. Set aside the sort of drama of losing a 31-point lead. Set aside Beverly getting into KD's head a little bit.
Yeah.
What did you see in the game that would make you worried as a Warrior fan? Was something X's and O's, something schematic, something that, aside from all the sort of noise, that actually you would take to games 3 and 4 in LA and think, okay, I want to see that get better. I'm interested how they adjust to that.
Nothing. But you want to know what, if I'm a Warrior fan, no different than your team has a bigger picture in mind. The Warrior fans should have a bigger picture in mind. If you play Houston in that second round, if you think Lou Williams is busting your ass, if you think Patrick Beverly is a problem, what do you think is going to happen with Chris Paul and James Harden? What, like, look, Klay Thompson, and it's not all on him. Andre Iguodala, it's not on him. It's done by committee. But Lou can't go for 30 plus and 11 assists. What will James Harden do to you? Like, it'll be absurd. It'll be, so you have to, listen, we need to shut these guys down because the next backcourt is even better. It's even more talented. The next team that you could potentially face, you were down 3-2. And if it wasn't for an injury to Chris Paul, I think even the Warrior fans know that it would have been tough.
For the record, because no fan base, this isn't even funny to say anymore. This has existed pre what happened late in the season. No fan base does angry like Utah. Okay. Oh. So in fairness, I'm not writing the Jazz off in that series. They looked really bad in game one. They could not execute the Bucks Spurs defense on James Harden. They'll be better, but Houston is a problem. I picked Houston in 6 in that series. Houston is a bad matchup for Utah for many reasons. But I just want to, for the record, because I don't want 9,000 angry tweets from mean people in Utah.
Hey, Utah, I love the city of Utah. Had a great time there. Really, really a lot of fun in Utah. But Utah fans, there's a difference between when we're talking basketball and being a fan of a particular team. Now, I'm not saying that your team can't do it. I was one of the leading people, Donovan Mitchell for Rookie of the Year. I was one of the leading people.
We disagreed on that one.
Yeah, I stand by it. I stand by it.
Was it because Ben Simmons was a fake rookie or because you just thought he was better?
It was because of this. It's kind of like the most improved argument that you and I had.
It was heated.
It got heated online. My thing with Donovan Mitchell is that Donovan Mitchell showed up to a team that was replacing an all-NBA player in Gordon Hayward, right? And he didn't know who his coach was going to be in June. He didn't know what system he was going to play. He didn't know any of that. And he went out there and dominated, right? Ben Simmons is not the, but Ben Simmons had a year of just working on basketball. Ben Simmons had a year of knowing who his teammates was going to be, who his offense was, what his offense was going to be, and to assimilate his game to dominate. Donovan Mitchell just showed up there as a rookie and was just like, here I am, NBA. And that to me, and look, he outdueled Paul George and Russell Westbrook in that first round. That just, it strengthened the argument that he was the best rookie in the NBA that year.
And in a way that he didn't outduel them like making spot up threes and transit. He outdueled them like, okay, you guys are going to switch screens, give the ball to me, pick and roll, mismatch. I'm going to the hoop and you cannot stop me.
It was so impressive. So when you look at that, to me, even now going back on it, when you look at what he did in the postseason and its continuation, I understand it's a regular season award, but who had a better rookie year? Who did more? Was it Ben Simmons or was it Donovan Mitchell?
I voted for Ben Simmons.
Why we don't like each other.
I will say, last night's game, let's go back to the Warriors. Last night's game, I just can't remember a more stunning individual turnaround. Now, the Clippers had one a few years, 6 years ago, I think, in Memphis, when Nick Young hit 1,000 three-pointers in the fourth quarter.
So, a little NBA history. That was the first time that a team had come back from down 20-something in the postseason since I played against the Boston Celtics, and we were up 25 going into the fourth quarter in Boston. And they hit 3 threes in like 4 possessions.
This is 02, right?
This is 02. 01.
01.
01, my rookie year.
Okay.
So then all of a sudden it's a 15-point game with 11 minutes to go. That's not that bad. And so we ended up losing that game, right? And then, but we still won the series.
In 6.
We won the series in 6. But it was one of those things that like, it can happen fast. What happened to us happened faster than what happened to the Golden State Warriors. It can happen. You're playing against the best players in the world. If Lou Williams gets going, there's 10, 15 guys that if they get going, there's nothing you can do about it.
You know that I was 23.
You're 23?
When that game happened.
Yeah.
Antoine Walker. I don't know if I've ever obsessed over an NBA player like I obsessed over Antoine Walker. Like, I just was obsessed with what he could be.
Yeah.
Cause one of the original stretch fours. I went to the movies during that game. I had a girl who was like, I don't want to watch basketball.
You were sick.
Big mistake.
Big mistake. Almost as bad as going to sleep and tweeting.
Yeah, very bad. Very bad. One of the reasons it was so stunning was because for six quarters of this series, the Warriors looked like a team that had flipped the switch on defense.
Yes.
Draymond looked like defense player of the year, Draymond. Yeah. Kevin Durant was everywhere. Okay. Klay always plays hard. Andre Iguodala flipped his switch from, he actually had a pretty good regular season, but he's in playoff mode.
Yeah.
And you saw, okay, well, they're going to be the best defense in the league.
It looked like the Detroit Milwaukee series. This is what I was telling somebody. I was like, look, with Blake Griffin out, Milwaukee has five players on their team that would be, I don't want to listen, Drummond, let's not disrespect him, but that would be the second best player on the Detroit Pistons team. They have five guys, right? Let's take Giannis out.
Oh, I see.
So Middleton would be the second best player, right, on their team. Let's say assuming Drummond is the best, right?
I may not go with you all the way, but be nice to Andre.
Okay. No, that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is like Drummond and whoever else, right? So you got Bledsoe, you got Middleton, Malcolm Brogdon, all of those guys are better than anybody else that Detroit has. That's why that series is going to be a problem.
That series, I feel confident keeping my tweet up for that part of the series.
Yeah.
I think that one should be.
Damon Jones says they're going to be the first team to win a series in three games.
I want Dwayne Casey, just get crazy. Now just get crazy. Play like five point guards all at once. Shoot 73s in a game.
You're just still crazy.
You're
still establishing habits, right? Even though you're not.
That's a very mature way to look at things.
I know, but even though you're not doing this, like, look, this is your goal is never that one year. Like, he wants to continue to build on it, so I understand still playing the right way.
Fair. So that was, to me, the thing that surprised me most is that anytime there's a 31-point comeback, it's great play by one team and a step back by the other team. And I thought the Warriors' defense, for whatever reason, could not bring, well, maybe because they were up 31 and the foul trouble screwed up their rotations. And I didn't like that fourth foul on Steph, by the way. That was another one. The only reason that foul could have happened was because the Clippers threw the ball out of bounds, inbounding it. I mean, how crazy is that?
Yeah. Things gotta go your way.
Yeah.
Even to win a championship, you have to have so many things go your way at the right time. No team just wins a championship by 20 points, even by 10 points all the way through. You need multiple things to go your way. And there was a bunch of things that went the Clippers' way last night, and it was just unfortunate. But even if you look at it, like Steph hits that big three, tied the game, takes the lead. They're going back and forth.
That three I want to ask you about because you played this team so many times. It's fascinating. So the Clippers, I think, have even gone a step further than most defenses in not guarding the guys who don't want to shoot threes. Like they're almost playing a zone off of Cousins, who's not playing anymore, off of Draymond, off of Iguodala. Like it's even more extreme. Like you can't even sometimes tell who's actually guarding those guys because they're on the opposite end of the floor. The downside of that is when the Warriors engage, when the Warriors read that and play what I would say correctly, things like that Steph 3 happens. So no one's guarding Andre.
Yeah.
Steph passes to Andre and runs right to him.
Yeah.
And there's a handoff and a wide open 3. I just always wonder, now you guys played them a little differently. You switched a little bit more. There's no great way to guard them.
No.
But finding, I guess not guarding those guys to that extreme is the correct answer. But it has, when the downsides of it hit, it looks so bad. They're like, I wonder if there's a place where you're almost taking it too far and giving them those. But I don't know what there's no right answer when you got all those guys on the same
team. There isn't. And that's the thing. You're saying it, take it too far, but really it's like they push you to your limits, right? So the very first couple of games in the finals when, in 16, we were trying to switch everything.
And you couldn't. It wasn't in your DNA.
We couldn't. There's just too much action. They're too good. Barbosa killed us. Harrison killed us. Livingston killed us. Their bench was like, Klay and Steph didn't do that great. Like, we did a great job of taking them away, But we gave up everything else. So then our next adjustment, which we switched in game three, was, okay, stay at home with everyone unless Steph and Klay come together. If Steph and Klay come together, that's the only switch you will make. If it's Steph and Draymond, if it's Steph and stay with Steph.
Just and look at Steph and follow Steph.
Follow Steph. And we'll give you help, but keep coming, right? Continue pursuing. And that helped our defense. That changed, really changed the series that T-Loop figured it out. And to your point, you got to kind of live with those repercussions of, look, I'd much rather have Andre Iguodala open than Steph. Steph is one, they're one of the few teams, maybe the only team I've ever played against that you could do it right, 100%, and they can still kill you, right? You can execute your defense, but his shot is too quick. They have too many weapons. There's just too much going on, and he can shoot it from God knows anywhere, so he extends your defense even more than you're happy about because it's like him and Dame Lillard that can shoot from freaking half court that it just makes it so difficult to guard.
I got sidetracked because by your very good point that maybe want to talk about that Steph 3. The defense in the second half, Gallinari hit a right corner 3 when Draymond just stopped guarding him. 4 or 5 times, including on Lou Williams' hanging bucket that I believe tied the game with 45 seconds left. I can't remember. They seemed to miscommunicate on how they wanted to guard some of Lou's pick and rolls. Lou's guy would shade him away from the pick, but the guy on the screener would be on the other side of the pick like they were having different coverages. And so Lou would have an alley to his right and he would just take it and go offensive rebounds. Harold just
one of the reasons why they want to shade to his right is because he's a dominant.
He wants to go left.
He's one of those few.
But there was no
players.
One there to meet him on the right side. So you can't just give him daylight. I mean, that's not a good choice.
But that's also credit to the Clippers for switching the screen. Like they're trying to shade one and you do it. So,
and it's a credit to the Clippers because Lou and Montrez are so good. You start to, what are we doing? Is he going here? Is he going there? He's faking us this way. It's like everything is intertwined. It's a credit to the Clippers for being threatening enough that they begin to question what they're going to do.
Well, and again, when we talk about big picture and we're allowed to look forward, they're not allowed. If you think a Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell pick and roll is going to keep them up at night and has been keeping them up at night.
It should.
What's going to happen when it's Clint Capella and it's Chris Paul and it's James Harden? Like, that's the concern that they should have is like, yo, I believe we'll win this series, but we're not playing great basketball right now. They're not playing the type of basketball that they need to play. They would be down 2-0 right now if they were playing against Houston.
Wow.
They'd be down
2-0. They did win game one by 17 points.
Yeah. They'd be down 2-0.
Basketball season is in full swing. This is when things start to get very interesting. The contenders start to outperform everybody else. And whenever you're driving your family or friends this basketball season, you should make sure your car has the right tires to get you there safely. Duh, you need good tires. Goodyear knows that performance is everything, whether it's on the road or on the basketball court. So when it comes to choosing tires, let Goodyear.com help you choose what's best. Goodyear, more driven.
Interestingly, in game one, DeMarcus Cousins was minus 17. And there has been an undercurrent for a long time now of maybe they're better without Cousins as strong, but I would frame it more as they're better with Looney and they're better with Bogut, or those guys fit what they need out of the center position more. DeMarcus Cousins posting up and taking shots away, too many shots away from the other star players is a net negative on them. I think there's a lot of merit to that. We can discuss it a little bit more. But I also think his injury, and he's likely out for the season, according to Chris Haynes at Yahoo just now, or faint optimism he could appear in the finals. Now, we're a long way from that. I think it does have some interesting ripple effects. But tell me sort of your morning after thoughts on what happens now to the Warriors.
Well, look, when we ask about concerns, like, and you know, we were just talking about it on Get Up, it goes from them having a 94% chance of winning to them having an 88% chance of winning. And let me tell you why. The playoffs are all about postseason. It's all about matchups. The strength of our team, when we were fortunate enough to win it in 2016, is you look at it, you had me and you had Channing Frye, right? So if a team would go small, I would play, right? So you look at we played against the Detroit Pistons in the first round. They had Tobias Harris. They had Morris. They had, you know, they had players that were kind of mid-range.
Tweeners.
So then I would play. Then you go up, fast forward to the Atlanta series. They had Al Horford and they had Paul Millsap. So all of a sudden Channing Frye played and could step them
and
away.
Hit about 9,000
threes. About 9,000 threes. Kevin Love hit about 9,000 threes, right? So that's what I'm saying. It gives you chess pieces. Then all of a sudden, and we get to the conference finals, and if it's Serge Ibaka or what, if it was Jonas Valanciunas, then Channing would play, right? Then we got to Golden State and then I played, Channing didn't play. The point being is this, DeMarcus Cousins is a chess piece. When you lose a valuable chess piece, don't give me he's a minus 17 in game one against the Clippers. Show me what he is in a game against Steven Adams. Show me what he is in a game against Clint Capela or against Brooke Lopez or against, you know, Joel Embiid. Those are the places where you need that chess piece.
The disrespect towards Ivica Zubac is not going to be tolerated on this podcast, my friend, okay?
Why? Is Magic Johnson here?
No, I'm a Croatian by marriage and he's a Croatian, so we're gonna temper that.
How are you Croatian by marriage?
I married a Croatian woman.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
It's my number two country.
It is a beautiful country.
Here's what I agree with you. So like I think for a normal team, and the Warriors are not a normal team,
but for a normal team,
you need everybody to win the championship.
True.
You need everybody. The Heat needed a Mike Miller game. The Mavs needed a Peja Stojakovic game. You need everybody.
Yeah.
The Warriors got Cousins because of because he was available, and B, because of what happened in the Houston series.
Yeah.
When the Rockets switched everything. Now, they're not even switching everything anymore, but they switched everything. And the Warriors, for about 2.5 games, bogged down, played Houston's game. Kevin Durant missed an unusual number of mid-range shots that – frankly, it's Kevin Durant. That's why he's on your team, is to take those shots. Like, he missed an isolation three with like 2 minutes left last night. And I could hear the Warriors towards, this is not how we play. I'm like, yeah, when he hits that three against Cleveland,
everyone's like, this is not fair.
This isn't fair that they have this guy.
Yeah.
So they got Cousins say, okay, you're going to switch everything against us. That means like Eric Gordon's going to be on DeMarcus Cousins at some point.
Yeah.
We're going to post his ass up.
Yeah.
Now they can't do that. That's not that interesting to me because I think they probably could have won that series even without that little 4 minutes of DeMarcus Cousins bullying guys. But it's a little bit interesting. What's interesting to me is they had settled into a rotation. So since KD got there, the only drama that we can manufacture about the Warriors
from them,
other than his free agency, is, well, okay, should they play Steph and KD together a lot and then have them on the bench together a lot? Should they stagger them? And Steve goes back and forth. And like, when they're not staggering them, the stagger people are like, hey, they've got to stagger them so there's one on the floor at all times and this and that. And they had found a nice middle ground, I thought, where they would sit together, but for a shorter period of time than they would have been like full-on playing together. So they had this nice little – KD would come out with like 3 minutes, 2 minutes left in the first quarter. Steph plays the whole quarter. Second quarter, they're both on the bench, and they had Quinn Cook, Sean Livingston, Klay Thompson, so one of the starters, Andre, honorary starter, and Boogie. So a small line. Andre's the power forward. Boogie's the center. That lineup had kind of settled in. That's our bench lineup. And they would either play through Klay or a lot play through Cousins. Well, that's gone now.
Yeah.
And so I'm just curious sort of what that does to, is Klay enough? Does one of Steph or KD come on the floor there, and do we go back to a full stagger? I mean, that's an interesting subplot to me.
That's a subplot. Look, this is the point that I took from your two minute dissertation is this. Yes, most teams, if they lose a guy like that, they're done. And Portland, they won game one. But the minute I was doing the Nets game when they lost Jusuf Nurkić, right? When they lost him. And my thing is this, their season was over once that happened. That doesn't mean that they can't win a series. It doesn't mean they can't win games. But if they were really, and I thought that this team could really contend to get to the conference finals. I'm not saying that they won't make it there. I think they would need some things to go their way. But that kind of swagger, that intensity, you still got Dame Lillard. You still got CJ McCollum. You still got a lot there, but your season and the outlook of your season completely changed. That's how good the Warriors are. They can lose to DeMarcus Cousins and there's no change in their focus. They just have to kind of recalibrate. That's how good they are. And people will never understand, especially as athletes, until you line up against those bad boys and you're trying to figure out the defense. Like, again, the same defense that we employed in 2016 was unusable in 2017 because instead of like ball bouncing around in Harrison Barnes, it was ball bouncing around and then it was Kevin Durant. So there was no answer to the offense that they had and the talent that they have. And I still think they're going to win a championship. And I still think that if they play well, they don't even need to play great. If they just play well, they win 4-2 against anybody coming out of the East.
And they still have the ultimate trump card, which is the death lineup with Draymond at center, which played 4 minutes last night, but would have played much more had Kevin Durant not fouled out.
Yeah.
And what I call the coma lineup with Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala's place. I would like more of that. Like when they get pressed, that's the answer. More of that. Just more of that.
But this is one of the things. So, and when they, you know, in 16, like understand that the injury to Steph early on, right? In, against, was it Portland? Well, who did they get
Houston.
Hurt? Houston. No. Where he sprained his ankle. Or no, hurt his knee. Steph hurt his knee.
Didn't he slip on the floor against Houston? I could be confused.
Was it in Houston? Either way, the next round, right? The next round, I think it was against Portland. Don't quote. Either way, conference finals against Oklahoma City. They were down 3-1. So they played deaf lineup the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that wore guys down. Andre Iguodala is an older player. Livingston's got a lot of miles on his body. You're not very, very deep. So that's the thing, the worry now. Foul trouble for a KD. There is no DeMarcus Cousins. Like these things can accumulate over the course of the postseason. I'm not worried about them in this first round. I'm not really worried about them in the second. Well, I am worried about them in the second round, to tell you the truth, because it's Houston if they're able to pass Utah. But ultimately, it just puts you in a position of like trying to figure out the best way to navigate, and losing that chess piece hurts a lot.
Yeah, it was interesting that they tried both Jarebko and Jordan Bell last night, because I think both of those guys will merit a look, particularly if you need a little more shooting. And we've talked about how they have a lot of lineups with like three dudes who can't shoot at all. So Jarebko could be an interesting piece there. You know, we'll see. And credit to the Clippers again. You know, it's kind of sad about the NBA that one of the first things I thought after watching the second half early this morning was, boy, this is exactly what the Clippers front office hoped for, because free agents could watch this and say, well, I could go there. And then I thought, why am I making this about July already? Why not celebrate this team that's on the floor doing this? Maybe they split one of the two in LA. Maybe it's 2-2 going back to Oracle, and now we're having fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's part of it, because we're always in no different than we're thinking ahead. People in the Clipper world are thinking ahead.
Oh, sure.
They're thinking that. Every basketball fan is like, yo.
Lawrence Frank and Michael Winger, those guys are thinking ahead.
Yeah, they're thinking ahead. And look, basketball, could you imagine? Let's just put this hypothetically. If KD were to leave, just KD, let's say they re-sign, say they bring in Tobias Harris. So they bring in another good wing player. You know, obviously he's not Kevin Durant, he's not even an all-star, but Tobias Harris, just another wing player. They're going to have cap space.
Well, I don't think Tobias is going back there, but somebody like that.
Somebody like that. A guy that can give you 15 points a game, right? Another version of Harrison Barnes, right? Imagine if that happens. No one knows. There would be no prediction for who would most likely win the NBA championship the next year.
No.
That's great for the game. So I have no problem looking forward to that.
Some people in the league office just like smiled when you said no one knows there'd be
no one knows.
Bomani Jones hasn't stolen the studio from us yet, so I'm going to ask you one more question because I have you
here. Take your time. Bomani's not going anywhere.
Because I have to ask this question. We have one more minute. I've just been given a notification, an urgent memorandum. Where were you and what was your reaction when you learned that Draymond Green was suspended for Game 5 of the 2016 Finals?
Where was I? I don't know. I feel like it might have been practice. I feel like because it was Game 5 he was getting suspended for, so maybe we were on the plane.
People remember it as being as you're getting on the plane.
I think I said we might have been on the plane. And I remember saying this, and, you know, I like, this is my problem, right? And this is not a sensitive moment. This is me just saying, people, Warrior fans, the only reason why I talk about this is because your team is still relevant and I was a part of the last team that was fortunate enough to get a win. So don't get sensitive. We're just talking basketball here. What I'm saying is that I remember saying, like, look, guys, we beat them by 30, right? We beat them by 30 in game 3. And I was like, yo, if you can win by 30, you can beat them 3 times in a row. And I remember saying this, we needed some help and we got some help. And that's not like help in the sense of like from the NBA, right? We needed some help. Like we needed something. We needed another jolt, right? Because we were devastated because we were up 8 in that fourth quarter against them in game 4. And they just outplayed us. They hit shots. But in my brain, I was like, yo, we can do this. We can do this. And that was our mentality. And we were a very together team. You can't come. Most of the time you're down 3-1. And to their credit, they did the exact same thing because they were so locked in together against Oklahoma City. They were so focused and they were so united. It is impossible to overcome that type of deficit unless you are completely united as a team. And that's the one thing I will say about our team is we were completely united no matter what the odds, very similar to what we saw from the Clippers. It didn't matter with that they were down 31. They were focused on one final goal, and then all of a sudden something broke, and then another thing broke, and then another thing broke, and all of a sudden they were able to get that win.
It was a great win, even if they lose 4-1.
Yeah.
We'll always remember that game.
Yeah.
And
it's history.
And they should take pride in it, and they should take pride in not giving up, and they should take pride in their season. Okay, Bomani needs a studio. RJ, thanks for making a little time.
Thank you for having me, Zach.
The playoffs will be going on for another 8 months, I think, so maybe we can do this again soon, my friend.
Yeah, I'll be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.